Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the AMSSM Sports Medcast, produced in collaboration with the BJSM. I'm your host, Dr. Jake Wessels, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Marcy Faustin.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This is great having you here. Dr. Faustin is a family and sports medicine physician at UC Davis. She did her fellowship training at UC San Diego and is a former high school gymnast, volleyball player, and D1 track and field athlete and Hall of Fame athlete at Loyola University Chicago. She currently serves as the co-head team physician for UC Davis's collegiate athletics and co-head team physician for USA Gymnastics women's national team. Through this, she's traveled with the team to 2020 Tokyo Summer Olympics and will be traveling upcoming to the 2024 Paris Olympics. Well, thanks for being here today, Dr. Faustin. That's such a cool resume you already have going.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And speaking about those Olympics is kind of one of the things that has you talking to us at the AMSSM upcoming annual meeting. Tell me more about your journey into becoming a D1 athlete and working with elite level athletes.
Yes. So growing up, actually, when we were younger, both my parents immigrated from Haiti, and my dad's rule was you couldn't come home after school. So we all had to do sports, my three sisters and I, and then when you were old enough, you could either choose work or sports. And so I chose to continue with athletics, and my sisters all chose to work. And then from there, I did volleyball, gymnastics, and track in high school, and then subsequently went to Loyola Chicago and was a high jumper and then a 200 and 400 runner. And actually, that is where I met the great Dr. Neeru Jayanthi, and he was my team physician. And so one day he was looking at me and examining my knee, and I said, "What do you do?" And he said, "Come with me." So he took me to clinic, he took me to resident teaching, he took me to the hospital, and that's how I even discovered what family medicine, sports medicine was. And so I'm forever grateful to him for that experience. And so then from there, I went to the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine, and then to San Diego for my family medicine residency and then sports medicine fellowship. And that's when I had the honor of meeting the great Dr. Jeff Tanji, who was at UC Davis, and he helped to recruit me to come up to Sacramento so that I'm doing both family medicine and then also doing the sports medicine and team physician aspects of that. In regards to getting to work with the elite level athletes, when I was in my fellowship at UC San Diego, we had some of our attendings that worked with national team athletes. We had a foot and ankle surgeon, and I told her I wanted to get involved with USA Gymnastics. And she told me, show up, use your time, use your energy, be willing and open to work in aspects that maybe you didn't think were within the physician level and just be a team player. And that advice with Dr. Sonia Ahmed changed everything for me. And so that's where I had opportunities to rotate and do rotations with those that worked with USA Gymnastics. From there, continued to have good mentorship and good leadership and continued on that journey. So right now, my co-head team physician with myself is Dr. Ellen Casey. She is a phenomenal human being, friend, colleague, physician, mentor, and she works at the Hospital of Special Surgery.
Very cool. So that sounds like an awesome route to get there. What drew you specifically to doing gymnastics? You said you asked someone about it. What brought you there?
You know, growing up, all those sports I did, gymnastics, I was the least talented at, but I loved it. I remember my sisters and I watching the 96 Olympics, and from there, I was just drawn to the sport. I loved practicing. I was not great at competing, but that's when I knew I just wanted to be around those individuals. I still have my friends from when I was in fifth, sixth grade doing gymnastics together. And so it was always a sport that I loved the most. And as we know, within sports medicine, you spend a lot of time with that sport. And so you want to be around something that you find enjoyment in and can really relate with the athletes too. And so that's how I went the route within gymnastics. So I've always known I wanted to work with them.
And so you work with the gymnastics team at UC Davis as well?
So myself and Dr. Kevin Burnham are the co-head team physicians. We have about 700 student athletes, 25, 26 sports. So we cover all of them, including gymnastics.
Oh, I see.
And yes, I've learned about other sports like equestrian through my time and seeing those athletes. But yes, I get to cover the gymnastics team also.
And so in your time as a collegiate level, a team physician, you've had lots of experiences, you know, making decisions and working with the athletes. Is there things that you've learned about the shared decision-making process or about making some of these FARD type level decisions, you know, in your fellowship or as you've been training, or did that more recently happen when you were working specifically with USA Gymnastics?
You know, I think through being involved with athletics from a very young age and within different sports, you realize how your coaches care for you as the athletes and then the individuals within that team. And I think that may have been my first experience of that shared decision-making about what you thought was best for yourself and for the team. I had great coaches when I was in college. I had great medical providers who involved me in that decision-making. And during that time, I think I didn't realize how rare it may have been and given me the opportunity to kind of learn myself and to advocate for myself and what I felt was the healthiest way to go, both physically and mentally. And so I think that was my first experience in understanding the importance of trust and the importance of knowing that those around you want the best for you in that regard. And so from, I think, a younger age to especially when I was in the collegiate level and then coming to work with the collegiate and the elite level gymnast, but even going back to my general population family medicine clinic, you know, we can only impact change when people know that you have their best interest at heart and you can build that trust. And from there, you can provide your expertise, but they're also experts within themselves and they're experts within their medical processes. And how do we come together to make sure that people get to live the best quality of life that fulfills them the most?
Yeah. You mentioned one of your intros into medicine was having your knee looked at by a provider. Were there experiences that you had in your own injury that helped? Like, do you have specific times that you remember, like learning about decision making or things like that in your experience?
I do. And I think one of the things that at times could have been difficult was there are not many female sports medicine providers within there. Hmm. There are not many minority sports medicine providers or those that really cross that intersectionality. You know, a Black female medical provider. And so there were times that you maybe felt like you weren't listened to, which is probably the biggest complaint we hear from our patients, right? Or our family members and friends who go to see that doctor. And I remember just being told, nope, you have to take 6 weeks off. That's what you have to do. But not understanding that taking 6 weeks off had significant implications, both physically and mentally within that, where we just needed to work on how do we modify what I'm doing, but still can allow my body to heal and whatever needs to heal and still work towards my goals. And so I saw both sides of that, and which is what pushes me to really have those conversations now with those athletes, because we have to figure out what their goals are for themselves individually, then what their goals are within the team, within their coaches, their family members, social media. They have so many external pressures, but I think getting to the foundation of what that individual wants and then working towards that direction, I think is the most valuable for them.
Yeah. You know, probably having that in your regular clinic can be a difficult experience, but as you elevate into a higher and higher elite level of athletes, then more people are questioning what's going on and asking you and who's making decisions. And it's hard. How do you figure out who's all at stake? You know, shared decision-making is, you know, you and the athlete, but there's also the team and there's also the expectations and these things. How, when you've been on the biggest stage with the Olympics and having those decision makings, how does shared decision making work in that situation?
I think in those situations and that more scrutiny you're under because of the decisions that you're making, we know that there are more pressures behind you, right? If we're at the Olympics, we know the United States is watching, Team USA is watching those decisions along with the world within that. And I think that's where that individual trust with that athlete becomes even more important, because they also themselves, as those athletes, they are under tremendous pressure that I can't even begin to understand. They have a lot of people around them that are yes people, or they want something from them, where they know for ourselves, for example, Dr. Casey and myself, the way we care for these gymnasts is to make sure that they know we care about them as an individual first. We then care about their gymnastics. And then we also care about their future. You know, we want to know, what are your future goals? Some of them want to become physicians. So we say, set them up with people that they can rotate with and have those experiences. And I think when they come to realize that we really are interested in that person and their well-being, and they know that we would never put them in a position that we felt it was unsafe for them to compete, then I think that's the way that we can make those decisions. And again, having those conversations. And really, I think for myself, I've learned that you have to block out some of those external influences, just like we tell the athletes to, you know, because if you have too much input coming into you, it's hard to know what you know yourself versus what is an external influence on you. And so I try to make sure that I have my mentors around me and those that I know I can call upon and get advice from that is sound advice that knows that this is what we're going to do that's best for the athlete as that individual.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, trying to figure out what is best for the athlete is like the hardest thing. Yeah. Sometimes, do you find that sometimes, you know, shared decision-making or that they are stuck in thinking something is best for them and you're at odds with it, like where shared decision-making seems like it's not a helpful thing? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
It does make sense. And I think there are times that's where medicine is hard, right? And we have a knowledge base behind us that we know our biggest thing is how do we keep them safe? And sometimes there are times that people want to go, go, go. And we know that's not safe for them. That can put them in danger physically, mentally. It can, in gymnastics, a sport in which they are flying through the air and coming down, they can have easily have a C-spine injury or some other type of catastrophic injury within that. And those are the times, if we're not agreeing upon that shared decision, that sometimes we just have to make the decisions for them. But that is before we make those decisions to communicate why we're making those decisions and to include the important people in that circle. Because that athlete has that pressure that they're under to compete. But then we involve the parents, we involve the coaches, sometimes we involve the agent or whoever it is that the athlete trusts with their decision-making also. And then we sometimes have to make decisions they're not always happy with, but they're the ones that we can sleep at night knowing that, you know, we didn't put them in danger.
Yeah. You said you still do regular family, you have a regular family medicine clinic as well.
Yeah.
So you probably see lots of mental health and, you know, shared decision-making ideas in that. How does that translate into the mental health that you've been able to employ or utilize in elite level athletes? What have you noticed in the last years or working with the teams as far as working with mental health in the elite level athletes?
Sure. I think I realized how important mental health was my first and second year of residency when you had your own small patient panel and you realized that it was almost a half to a third was mental health was the reason for the visit, whether that patient was aware of it or not. Right. And sure. You realize that we have to take care of that aspect. And it's been something that I've been passionate about for a very long time. And I think it's almost one of the hardest things to take care of because it's something you can't see. There's so much stigma behind it, you know, whether it's your culture or your family or whatever that may be, that maybe mental health isn't as important or even awareness about how it can impact the rest of your health. Mm-hmm. And I think within our elite level athletes, by the time they get to that elite level, they're physically at a place and have been training for so many years, so many hours that physically they can do it. They know that. But I think that a lot of times the make or break is how can we keep them mentally healthy and mentally safe? And I think a lot of that is being very realistic with them to say like, oh no, there's no pressure or you're going to do great today. You know, to give those false sense, they know that's not real, right? We have to say there is pressure on you, but how are we going to manage that pressure? Which pressure is the appropriate pressure for you to have and which is not for you to hold? And really trying to decipher that and then pulling in our resources, our sports psychologist or their therapists at home to help with them within their mental health. Sometimes medications come into play. It's just, I think a lot of it is giving the space for the athletes to talk about their mental health and just how they're feeling, right? Because name it to tame it. The more you can name your emotions, the less it feels overwhelming to you and the less that it feels like it's controlling your life. And so I think giving them that space to talk about how they're feeling, knowing that this is not a weakness. This is actually your strength, your vulnerability. Mm. And that's a hard shift that we're trying to make, but I think changes are moving in that direction.
I think that's an important change that I've started to sense in some areas, but I think there's still a lot of resistance around that idea when I talk with different athletes or work with different physicians about it. Well, tell me, is there any case example or a situation you can tell us about some things you learned or how the experience taught you or helped for your future patient care that you could share with us or our listeners?
A more specific example I can think of very vividly is a collegiate athlete that I had over the last couple of years who unfortunately has undergone some sexual assaults and really fell into a deep depression and anxiety. And for a long time we were caring for her. We got a big multidisciplinary team because honestly, our goal was to keep her alive and to keep her safe from herself. You know, what I learned in that case that was really challenging and also understanding myself and how I'm emotionally feeling while taking care of these athletes so I can have awareness of that is that when you feel like you maybe are losing sense of, are we doing the best for the athlete? It's getting other people outside of that clinical scenario to help you make those decisions. And for this athlete, it was quite difficult to watch her, and we were worried about her safety from herself. And eventually, in working with the psychiatrist and the sports psychologist and my other team physician and the athletic trainer, we actually did put a 5150 on her and sent her to the hospital. And that was the second time we had to do that. And that was one of the most difficult things I think I've had to do, because the athlete herself felt betrayed by us and betrayed by myself because we had taken this drastic measure for her. Although coming out on the other side, we see how it actually helped turn things around for her. She's in a better place. We knew it was going to be a traumatic experience for her, and to help her process through that and have the support system around her, including her parents. But I think learning that, and a good reminder in asking for help myself as a physician and somebody that's a little bit further outside of the case to help say, no, this is what we have to do. And like you were talking about before, taking that paternalistic action, because that was a thing we could do to help at least for those few days confirm that she was going to be safe from herself.
Ooh, those are heavy ones.
They are. They are. It's hard to take care of mental health, but it's rewarding.
Yeah. But yeah, because that's what the athlete needs. That's the way that they can, you know, keep being an athlete, keep improving.
Exactly. And they just need to be people. And we want her to be able to come out. And, you know, the best medical care they get is during collegiate athletics. When they go to the real world, your access to care, as we know, can be disparate at times, especially depending on what community you're in or what access you have or your financial stability within that. And so we just want to make sure we try to set her up for life to be successful.
Well, thanks for sharing that. This is great. This is a really good talk. I think, is there anything that I didn't ask you about or that you think would be worth adding into this?
I think the last thing I'd say is mental health is hard. It's a hard aspect of medicine to take care of. And I still get nervous because you don't know what responses you're going to get. And I think just a reminder to all of us that just because people are smiling or people look like they're succeeding in so many realms, that we have to ask those hard questions. And most importantly, listen for the answers and not forgetting to ask about self-harm all the time, not forgetting to ask about suicidality, because we know that does not increase the risk of suicide. And so we need to be very direct about that question of, do you have thoughts of killing yourself? And if the answer is not an adamant no, then for me, that answer is a yes. And figuring out where it is that we can try to build that trust so we can help to get those athletes safe. And I think just learning more emotional awareness of ourselves and how we work and maybe what our triggers are or what are difficult patients for us. You know how they always teach us, if you go in a room with somebody anxious, you leave anxious because of that. Mm-hmm. But I think having that self-awareness helps us to better care for those patients because what they just want is to be validated and to be heard, you know, and to feel safe and not alone in what they're experiencing. And as physicians, it's easy for us to want to have an answer all the time, give answers. But I think a lot of times the answers in mental health is listening. And that's hard to do, but to be empathetic and to sit down next to them versus stand up next to them and talk to them, it doesn't work that way. And we want to just be empathetic and compassionate and listen to people's stories and be there with them.
Well, that is a great summary at the end, Dr. Fostin. Thanks for saying that. And to our listeners, if you're interested in hearing Dr. Fostin talk about any other specific elite athlete cases, she may have a main stage session at our Baltimore annual conference. Dr. Fostin will be presenting in our Shared Decision-Making Mental Health Considerations Session 7. So we look forward to seeing you all there to hear Dr. Fostin tell us more about this that she's so good at. Thanks, Dr. Fostin, for speaking to us on this today.
Thank you for having me here today and for highlighting a topic I'm so passionate about.
And I'd like to thank you, the listener, for taking time out of your day to learn with me. I look forward to having you back for our next edition of our AMSSM Sports Medcast.